You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, and sound by Matthew Jackson on Radio CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal or online at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Unemployment benefits for millions of U.S. workers expired on Labor Day after President Biden declined to press the Democratic-led Congress to extend assistance, even as many states suffer their worst surge of the pandemic. An estimated 9.3 million jobless workers lost benefits, along with 26 million members of their households who relied on the income. The cutoff of aid came after the Labor Department reported the U.S. economy added just 235,000 jobs in August, a significant slowdown due largely to the spread of the Delta coronavirus variant. The unemployment rate for African Americans rose 0.6 percentage point in August to 8.8%. On Labor Day, President Biden met with members of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers in Wilmington, Delaware, shaking hands and posing for selfies. Across the United States, at least 1,000 schools in 35 states have canceled in-person classes since the start of the school year, with tens of thousands of students forced to quarantine due to community spread of coronavirus. A disproportionate number of closures have come in the Deep South, where vaccination rates are lowest and public health measures in schools are lax to non-existent. Cases are rising fastest in school districts where students have been back in classrooms for weeks. The U.S. is now averaging over 1,500 COVID-19 deaths and 150,000 positive tests per day. In Idaho, Republican Governor Brad Little said hospitals are preparing to adopt crisis standards of care, with medical workers set to ration care as hospitals fill beyond capacity with COVID-19 patients. In Afghanistan, the Taliban has claimed control of Panjshir Valley, the last holdout of anti-Taliban forces. A spokesman said the Taliban was in the final stages of forming a new government with an announcement expected shortly. He denied reports of infighting and a power struggle within the Taliban ranks. Meanwhile, attacks on Afghan women are continuing to escalate. Witnesses in the central Ghori province said Taliban militants beat a female police officer in front of her family Saturday before fatally shooting her. In Kabul, protesters and journalists were assaulted Saturday at a rally demanding equal rights. Protesters said Taliban soldiers blocked them from marching on to the presidential palace.
Together with a group of our colleagues, we wanted to go near a former government office for a protest. But before we got there, the Taliban hit women with electric tasers, and they used tear gas against women. They also hit women on the head with a gun magazine, and the women became bloody. There was no one to ask why.
The World Health Organization warns more than 2,000 health care centers across Afghanistan may soon be forced to close, at least temporarily, because their donors are barred from working with the Taliban. This is WHO Regional Emergency Director Rick Brennan.
That will be associated with an increase in illness and death, we would expect, and also rolling back the tremendous health gains of the last 20 years.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. is negotiating with the Taliban for the safe passage of U.S. citizens, and some Afghans are to leave aboard charter flights. A team of engineers from Qatar is working with the Taliban to restore service to Kabul's main airport. Domestic flights have resumed, but international civilian flights remain on hold due to damage to the airport's radar and navigation systems. The UN World Food Program has published disturbing new footage of the humanitarian crisis in Ethiopia's Tigray region. The footage, which was recorded in August, showed an emergency food distribution site with supplies being loaded on camels and brought to a remote area of Tigray that had been cut off from aid for months. This comes as the United Nations continues to warn millions of people are on the brink of famine, saying an estimated 100 trucks of aid need to be entering Tigray each day to meet people's urgent needs. This is a resident of Tigray who was displaced by the months-long conflict that started in November.
I couldn't sleep at night and think straight at day, thinking about what to feed my kids. I still think about how to provide for my kids.
In Guinea, an army colonel said Sunday he had dissolved the government of President Alpha Conde following reports of a gun battle near the presidential palace, spiraling the West African nation into political uncertainty. On Sunday, pictures surfaced of Conde in the custody of men wearing military attire. Meanwhile, Guinea government officials have been banned from leaving the country. This is Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya, the coup leader.
The committee wants to reassure our economic and financial partners of the normal continuation of activities in the country. Mining companies are asked to continue their activities. The maritime borders will stay open for the export of mining products. The curfew in mining areas is lifted in order to continue producing.
Conde was a year into a contested third term. He won after he made changes to the constitution, allowing him to run for re-election. In Brazil, millions of supporters of far-right President Jair Bolsonaro are expected to take to the streets today on Brazil's Independence Day, triggering fears from opponents of political potential chaos and violence. Ahead of the massive march, over 150 lawmakers, academics, and former government officials from around the world wrote a letter saying they fear Bolsonaro and allies, which include white supremacist groups and military police, may be seeking to instigate a Trump-like insurrection or military coup. Polls show more than half of Brazilians wouldn't vote for Bolsonaro in next year's election. Their letter read in part, quote, "The people of Brazil have struggled for decades to secure democracy from military rule. Bolsonaro must not be permitted to rob them of it now," it said. Meanwhile, ruling from the Brazilian Supreme Court's expected soon on a case that could determine if thousands of Brazil's indigenous people can reclaim ancestral lands stolen from them. In Mexico, immigration and security forces violently blocked the passage of hundreds of asylum seekers in the southern state of Chiapas who hoped to reach the U.S. for refuge. The caravan was largely made up of Central American and Haitian families. In more immigration news, the Biden administration's once again deporting asylum seekers to Guatemala City by air, marking a possible end to the practice of expelling asylum seekers to a remote jungle in the Guatemala-Mexico border. This is an asylum seeker who was deported to Guatemala last week.
For now, we lost, and it's not worth crying over because the trip cost us money. We didn't leave with our own money, but with borrowed money. It's a harsh situation because things are very hard here. We lost. We need to carry on here in Guatemala, take any jobs we can find, because life is hard here. We were unexpectedly deported for wanting to live the American dream.
Parts of Louisiana remain underwater more than a week after Hurricane Ida struck as one of the most powerful storms ever to hit the United States. More than 600,000 electricity customers in Louisiana still have no power. The storm's death toll rose over the weekend to at least 63. At least 50 deaths came in the northeastern U.S. as Ida's remnants brought record rainfall and flash flooding. President Biden's visiting storm-ravaged areas of New York and New Jersey today. Nearly one in three U.S. residents live in a county hit by a weather disaster in the past 3 months. That's according to a Washington Post analysis of federal disaster declarations. The Post reports that 64% live in places that experienced a multi-day heat wave. On Sunday, more than 220 health journals around the world published a joint editorial demanding urgent action to keep average global temperature increases below 1.5 degrees centigrade. In Minnesota, progressive congresswomen of color have joined the fight against Enbridge's Line 3 pipeline, demanding President Biden intervene to halt the project. If completed, Line 3 would carry more than 750,000 barrels of Canadian tar sands oil a day through indigenous land and fragile ecosystems. Minnesota's Ilhan Omar led a rally by congressmembers known as the Squad.
They want to prioritize corporate profit over the lives of indigenous women and the future of our planet. Joe Biden promised to be the climate president, and this is his opportunity to follow through.
Michigan officials are urging hundreds of families to evacuate their homes near a Detroit area Ford Motor plant after 1,400 gallons of gasoline leaked into city sewers. The Wayne County Health Department says there's little risk of an explosion, but residents are at risk from toxic benzene fumes that can cause cancer. In Lakeland, Florida, a former U.S. Marine sniper carrying multiple guns and wearing full-body armor targeted a family apparently at random early Sunday morning, killing four people in their own home. Among the dead was a mother and a three-month-old baby she was cradling. An 11-year-old girl who was shot seven times survived. The shooter also killed the family's dog. The gunman, 33-year-old Brian Riley, was wounded during an intense gun battle with police and arrested. Riley was deployed as a Marine sharpshooter in both Iraq and Afghanistan between 2008 and 2010. Riley's girlfriend said he suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. He had a concealed weapon license and was working as a security contractor. Actor Michael K. Williams, best known for bringing to life the character of Omar Little on HBO's acclaimed series The Wire, has died. He was 54 years old. Williams was found unresponsive in his Brooklyn apartment Monday afternoon. His death is being investigated as a potential drug overdose. In a 2017 interview with the New York Times, Williams opened up about his struggles with substance abuse. He said, quote, "Addiction doesn't go away. It's an everyday struggle for me, but I'm fighting," unquote. And legendary Greek composer Mikis Theodorakis has died at the age of 96. His popular songs and music, including the scores for the movies Zorba the Greek and Z, were banned during the military dictatorship of the 60s and 70s in Greece. And Theodorakis spent much of his 3 years of banishment in a remote village and in prison. And in Mexico City, a statue of Christopher Columbus that was removed last year will be replaced by a statue of an indigenous woman. Mexico City's mayor, Claudia Sheinbaum, made the announcement Monday.
It is a great recognition of the 500 years of resistance by indigenous women in our country. This is for them. We owe them and the history of our country, of our homeland.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, 9/11's unsettled dust. Yes, this week marks the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. We look at an enraging new documentary on the impact of the toxic, cancer-causing smoke and dust that hung over Ground Zero and how the Environmental Protection Agency— were they protecting Wall Street? Told people the air was safe to breathe. Stay with us. Partisans by Mikis Theodorakis.
Sarah's excited to celebrate her birthday at a restaurant. She's thought about it all week. She invited her friends. She got a new dress. She went to the restaurant. She wasn't allowed in the restaurant. She had to put away her new dress. She couldn't see her friends. And she thought about it all week.
Don't wait until it hits you. Get vaccinated. A vaccination passport is now required to enter certain public spaces. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday, there will be a light rain at a high of 24 degrees Celsius. Thursday, there will be the chance of a shower and a high of 24 degrees Celsius. Friday, there will be the chance of a shower and a high of 19 degrees Celsius. Saturday will be mainly sunny with a high of 22 degrees Celsius. Sunday, there will be the chance of a shower and a high of 25 degrees Celsius. Monday will be mainly sunny with a high of 20 degrees Celsius. Finally, Tuesday will be mainly sunny with a high of 23 degrees Celsius.
Troubles come and go. It won't be long till all that's said and done. It's locked away inside a dream. Open up your eyes and start again. When you're falling down and you can't break
thought of all that I could say to you. Even after all the things you put me through, I felt it in my veins. Still, I played all your games. Why was it so hard for me to see the truth? Everything I did is the same. Every time you walked away, every time I let you get the best of me, I let you stay. How am I nothing left to say? Who'll be the one to blame? When your shadow's all that's left for you, you know
You're listening to Radio CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal or online at ckut.ca.
From Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock to the 14-year-old rocking out in their room, the electric guitar has been one of the most recognizable sounds of the last century. But have you ever wondered how the hell they actually work? This week on In the Shower, we're snapping the strings.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Hello, lovely people, and welcome to In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, a bite-sized, informative podcast that aims to answer the mysteries of the world in the time it takes you to shower.
Have you ever wondered the answer to questions like, do plants have feelings?
What makes food spicy?
Do periods actually synchronize?
Why is plastic so bad?
Or about 70 more?
If you have, then good news, you've come to the right place. We've answered all of those questions. You can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we're about to answer one more.
This week's question comes from the one and only Tom Wilkinson, who's asked us how the hell an electric guitar works. So step into the shower as we answer his question on another episode of In the Shower with Taz and Marcus.
In the shower with Taz and Marcus, 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 in the shower with Taz and Marcus.
Here we are, 2019, the first episode of the new year.
Happy just new- when I get used to saying like 2018, it's 2019. Like just when I got used to saying 2017, it was 2018. And all of a sudden we're in 2019. And do you know what next year is, Marcus? It's bloody 2020.
Yeah, exactly. 2020. Freaking the time hell. Doesn't stop.
This is our third year podcasting.
Is it?
Yeah. We started in 2017.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Time flies when you're answering questions in the shower. Anyway. This week's question comes from Tom Wilkinson in Manchester, and it was awesome to answer, mainly because it was one of those questions that I thought I knew the answer to, but I actually didn't really. He asked very simply how an electric guitar works.
Do you know what? Is an electric guitar not just powered by the raw energy of rock flowing through your body?
Do you know what? It may seem like that sometimes, but there's actually far more to it than that. Have you ever played guitar, Taz?
I haven't really, actually. Both of my brothers do, but I have never. Have you?
Yeah, I've played guitar most of my life. I started playing guitar when I was about 10. I've played guitar two-thirds of my life, which is crazy. I've always been obsessed with electric guitars. I used to, on the way home from school, every single day, stop into a little guitar shop that's still there and guitar for about an hour. They must have hated me in that shop. Like, I'd say they could set their watch every single day by me. It had a lock on the door. You had to knock to get in. By me, like, with my giant school bag as, like, a 13-year-old knocking on the door being like, hello, can I come and play guitar again and not buy anything?
I'd say they loved it.
I don't know, but do you know what? Like, researching this episode made me realise that, like, from that age up until now, I've kind of taken electric guitars for granted. Because, you know, it's just like lead goes in, sound comes out, something, 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 magnets. But actually, there's some really cool history and some really interesting electronics there.
Yeah, like if you paid me right now 50 quid to explain how an electric guitar works, I genuinely wouldn't have a clue. Going out on a whim, I'm guessing it's something to do with maybe vibrations or something. But let's start at the beginning. Do you have any idea kind of who made the first electric guitar? When was it made? What do we know?
So I always thought that it was Leo Fender. So
Fender guitars.
Of Fender guitars, yeah. I thought that he created the first electric guitar. And I was actually totally wrong. And it predates him by quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm going to give kind of a historical synopsis of this and then we'll kick into how it actually works. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it.
So in the 1920s, acoustic guitars were common across a lot of genres, from jazz to swing bands to everything like that. But generally, they were an accompanying instrument due to their lack of volume. And like there was modified guitars that had more volumes, like kind of banjo guitars and dobros, which are guitars with a metallic body.
And by more volume, you mean actual like sound
actual sound louder. Volume, yeah. But what drove the creation of the electric guitar was the desire for more volume on the part of guitarists, who in true rock star form were sick of playing a supporting role and really wanted to be in the spotlight.
So this is kind of maybe in comparison to drums, which could get a louder volume naturally.
Exactly. Drums, you could amplify. And
even
the thing
singing,
is,
I suppose, could be amplified easier than...
Well, the guitars could have been amplified by holding a microphone right up to the guitar, but it was never an electric guitar.
Yeah, okay.
So all those early recordings you hear of, like, you know, swing jazz in the 1920s and stuff like that, was always a guitar being, an acoustic guitar being amplified through a microphone as opposed to being electrified as an instrument itself.
Okay, and then, like, right? Guitarists kind of thought there has to be a better way to do this.
Yeah, because what that amplification did through a microphone meant that it didn't pick up the finer details.
Mm.
It just picked up the whole resonance as a sound.
Right, right.
So various types of modifications were made to hollow body guitars. Just to give it for non-guitarists, a hollow body guitar is any guitar that you can think of, like an acoustic. It has a hole in it, or it has F holes on the side of it, like a cello, and it produces resonance by vibrating the actual body of the guitar, and the hollow produces the amplification.
That's essentially why there's a hole in acoustic guitars.
Exactly. So the sound leaves that hole. The whole body of the guitar vibrates, and the hollow actually amplifies that sound, right? Mm. So various modifications were made to that kind of guitar, such as attaching horns. Like, you know, like kind of like a trumpet horn or an amplification horn.
Out of one of the holes.
Or like having it attached separately, yeah.
Okay.
Then like metallic resonators, and then very basic magnetic pickups or transducers, which turned the guitar into a lead standalone instrument, which led to the development of a ton of revolutionary new musical styles.
So new musical styles. What kind of genre could our lovely listeners listen to if they want to hear these early instruments?
So a lot of people think that like early electric guitar music was like, you know, rock and blues.
Yeah, but absolutely.
Like before that, in the 1930s, the first big genre that it kind of came to was Hawaiian music.
No way!
Yeah, which is actually really lovely to listen to. And if you look up on YouTube, search for like early 1930s Hawaiian music, you'll get a really good idea of what that sound. And the first electric guitar which was commercially produced in the 1930s was brought to the market by Rickenbacker, who are still making guitars and basses, really, really lovely guitars and basses. It was nicknamed the Frying Pan. And this guitar was called the Frying Pan because of its shape. It was a basic guitar neck and a small circular body with one magnetized pickup on it. And it was played flat across the lap. So you'd hold a slide in your left hand if you were right-handed.
I think I've actually seen it before. It's ringing a bell.
You kind of slide up and down, and it creates like that distinctive, like relaxed Hawaiian slidey sound.
Okay.
Yeah, so like that really, really distinctive, dreamy sound was the first electric guitar which was kind of brought into mainstream music, and it was produced and sold and recorded with.
Okay, cool. So moving on from the frying pan, what's kind of the next step in a guitarist's journey?
Inspired by the sound and the mechanics of the frying pan, a man named Orville Gibson, whose name is still plastered on the headstocks of some of the finest guitars available today, just Gibson guitars. I mean, that's a household name.
Right, yeah.
Even if you're not a guitarist. So he created what's seen as the first hollow body electronic guitar, which defined the sound of jazz and swing in the 1940s. It was called the Gibson ES-150. And he basically attached a magnetic pickup to a hollow body guitar. Now, this wasn't without its issues. The fact that the guitar was hollow led to issues with resonance and feedback, which meant that when it was plugged in, the gain had to be turned down quite substantially for the sound to be clear. But that...
From resonance, is an echo within the body of
course,
the guitar.
But that, you know, from any kind of difficulty comes invention. And that led guitarist and luthier. A luthier is somebody who makes guitars.
A luthier,
amazing. Yeah. Led guitarist and luthier Les Paul to create the first ever solid body electric guitar in 1940. And the first guitar that he created, and this is actually so interesting, I didn't know this, isn't the iconic Les Paul, which, you know, like when you think, generally when people think of an electric guitar, they either think of a Fender Strat or a Gibson Les Paul. Like that's the two default,
yeah,
like almost kind of meme guitars. What he first did was he took a standard hollow body guitar and he actually cut the whole thing into three sections. So he cut the center part out of the guitar and it was left with the two kind of wings.
Okay.
And he made a guitar which was nicknamed the Log by putting a magnetic pickup into a solid piece of wood and then gluing the two sides of a hollow body guitar onto it. So they actually didn't have a function other than appearance.
Ah.
The guitar... The guitarist's pickup was put in a solid piece of wood, and that was the first ever solid body electric guitar. This killed the resonance, it killed the feedback, and the
kind of... And it kind of looked like a guitar, essentially.
And it looked like a guitar, exactly. The rest is history. All the subsequent music which defined the sound of the electric guitar can be pinpointed to that moment.
No way!
That Les Paul created
the first. So who are we talking?
Oh, like Jimi Hendrix, the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Santana, anybody, really. Like everyone to like modern guitarists like Tom Misch, anyone who... That can actually just be pinpointed right back then to 1940 when Les Paul created that. And his name is still, like, Les Pauls are still some of the best guitars that you can get. He died in 2009. And when you look at the impact that he singularly had on music,
it's mad.
Absolutely fascinating.
So this was essentially all because guitarists wanted to be heard and didn't want to be in the back line anymore.
Exactly.
But kind of like to answer Tom's question, how do they actually work? Like, how did Les Paul invent this? How does it work? And... Yeah, like, you know.
So earlier in the episode, I mentioned a thing that might have kind of gone in as guitar jargon called a pickup, right? If you look at any electric guitar, the pickups are a series of magnets on the body of the guitar, which somehow miraculously take acoustic signal and turn them into electric signals, allowing them to be amplified.
So how does a magnet turn sound into an electronic frequency? That seems like witchcraft.
Yeah, it actually seems a bit like witchcraft, but when you break it down, it's really interesting. So below each string, the strings are always made of metal in an electric guitar, and so they're magnetized. Below each string is a magnet around which a copper wire is wrapped many, literally thousands of times, right? Which creates a magnetic transducer, which in turn creates a stable magnetic field around the strings.
So how do the magnets turn acoustic resonance into electronic signal?
So here's the interesting thing. It isn't actually the acoustic resonance of the string which gets amplified. For example, that's what happens in an acoustic guitar, but rather in an electric guitar, it's the vibration of the string at a certain frequency which disrupts that magnetic field and then gets turned into an electric signal, and that's what gets amplified. So for example, the A string vibrates 440 times back and forth every single second, which translates to 440 hertz.
No way!
Yeah, so that sends it to the guitar's output through the lead to an amplifier.
That's incredible.
Isn't it?
So electric guitars all really come down to magnets and good vibrations.
Exactly, Munda.
Good vibration!
The sound gets converted to a very weak electrical signal at a certain frequency, which gets sent to an amplifier, which converts it back into sound, and bingo. You can rock out in your room pretending that you're melting faces with a stormer of a guitar solo on the main stage of Coachella. All thanks to the humble magnet.
Jesus, that is so interesting. I can safely say that I have learned a lot on that episode.
Do you know what?
Because it's something that you think is going to be like witchcraft, and it is essentially witchcraft, but it's witchcraft that kind of makes sense.
It is. And do you know what? Guaranteed every single person listening to this knows at least one person who plays guitar.
Absolutely.
So knowing that little thing, it's just like, it's real day knowledge, you know, it's applicable.
It's what we aim to do here at In the Show with Tess and Marcus. So come here to me, Marcus. Do we have any guitar facts at the end of the episode?
I have a couple of facts, yeah. So we'll start big, right?
Yes.
The most expensive guitar ever sold was the Reach Out Asia Stratocaster.
Wow, that's a name.
Reach Out Asia. So this was a guitar which was made specifically to be auctioned as a benefit for the 2004 tsunami in Indonesia, right?
Right.
And it was played and then signed by pretty much every living guitar legend of its day, right? So Eric Clapton, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, Ronnie Wood, Brian May from Queen, Dave Glimmer from Pink Floyd, Jimmy Page from Zeppelin, Jeff Beck, Mark Knopfler, Pete Townsend, Tony Iommi, Angus Young, Malcolm Young, Sting, Richie Blackmore, members of Def Leppard, Jesus. Brian Adams, Liam Gallagher, Paul McCartney, and more.
Holy moly.
And that sold for $2.7 million in auction to an anonymous buyer from Qatar.
Holy crap. Do they call it their electric guitar?
Oh, Jesus. You see? Ah, come on. That was terrible. You were not used to...
Okay, do you have another one?
I do, yeah. So the first guitar was actually created in ancient Egypt.
What?
Well, kind of, right?
Okay.
It was a guitar-like instrument created 3,500 years ago. It'd be a far cry from the guitars we play today, right? It belonged to a celebrity singer in Egypt at the time called Harmose. and was made from polished cedar with a rawhide soundboard. It had three strings and even had a plucking plectrum device attached to the instrument via a cord. And it's actually still, it's still intact, and it's on display at the Archaeological Museum of Cairo.
Holy moly, 3,500 years ago. Mm-hmm. Madness. Okay, one more?
Well, last fact. Okay. In 2001, a British musician called Chris Black fell so madly in love with his red Fender Stratocaster, known by the nickname Brenda the Fender, that he married it after 35 years of dating.
Stop.
Yeah, the ceremony was held in a church in London and was officiated by a friend.
Stop.
The guitar was technically his second wife, as Chris was also married to a human woman at the time.
Human woman.
I like how they really had to specify.
Human woman.
And Chris, in a statement, said, never taking himself too seriously, it was only for a bit of a laugh to cheer people up.
Come on, Chris.
Brenda the Fender.
In the show with Des and Marcus, 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 in the show with Des and Marcus.
Well, there you have it. That is how an electric guitar works. I learned something, and I hope you did too.
There you go. So if your nephew or your daughter or your friend or your housemate got an electric guitar for Christmas and they are shredding up the house and it's wrecking your head, now you have a little bit more insight into why.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of In the Show with Taz and Marcus. We have so many other episodes just like this one of varying lengths. None of them are longer than 20 minutes that we answer the mysteries of the world. We do them in a bite-sized chunk. You will be a more interesting dinner party guest if you listen to all the episodes. And they're good fun.
They're good fun. Thank you very, very much for listening. I love you. Taz loves you. We love you.
If you like In the Show with Taz and Marcus, even if it's the first time you listened or it's the 50th time you have listened, please, please, please do recommend this podcast to a friend or to a family member or to the person sitting beside you on the bus. If you shared it on your social media, that would equally be really, really helpful. The way this podcast grows is through word of mouth. So if you enjoy it, please, please do tell your friends about it.
And if you want to get in touch with us, it couldn't be easier. If you have a question that you want us to answer on In the Shower, or you just want to say hello or send us a picture of your dog in 2019, that is also cool. If you want to get in touch with us on social media, just search for In the Shower with Taz and Marcus on Facebook, or look up In the Shower Pod on Instagram or Twitter.
If you want to send a question to our email, you can get us at intheshowerpodcast@gmail.com. I forgot where I was going there for a second.
Yeah, you really built up tension there. If you want to send a question to our... Where are you going to send it to?
But in all honesty, we are looking for more questions. So please, if you have any questions that keep you up at night, or if your granny had any questions at Christmas that made you go, I wonder, please do send it in and we'll debunk it for you.
Couple of thank yous to end the episode.
Thank you so much, Flo Robinson, for doing our cover art.
Thank you to Alan and Paddy and all the crew in the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
And finally, thanks so much to Dave Gertzman for our theme music.
Dave Gertzman, you're a legend.
Next week's episode, Marcus.
Next week's episode. You know what? We haven't done a bum episode in a while.
We haven't, and I think it's about time.
I think we need to start the year off in a good way. Just to give a bit of context, when we launched In the Show with Taz and Marcus, we got inundated with questions about bums and poos and farts and everything, and we kind of put a little veto on them.
But we're back, baby!
We're back!
Next week's question, Marcus.
Next week's question is, why do dogs sniff each other's bums?
That episode is going to be out next Monday in time for your morning shower. But in the meantime,
keep scrubbing.
In the show with Des and Marcus, 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 in the show with Des and Marcus.
This has been a production of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, and sound by Matthew Jackson on Radio CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal, or online at ckut.ca.
Well, we've had a great time with you here on the Wednesday Morning After. Until next week, keep listening to CKUT.
C'est la 107e émission du Sleepy King Radio, une émission de poésie et musique qui est à CKUT depuis un bon petit bout de temps. On est début septembre, le mercredi 8 septembre 2021, et on commence cette émission tout en douceur avec Mary Lattimore, une harpiste extraordinaire qui, au plus fort de la pandémie, a décidé de créer une pièce uniquement apaisante, auquel elle a donné le nom volontairement quétaine de A Unicorn Catches a Falling Star in Heaven. On écoute ça, on se laisse aller doucement là-dedans, et je vous reviens un peu plus tard.